Ever wonder how a Comic-Con comes together? Here are two guys that know, because it's what they do every day. It's the Con Men Podcast. Now for one more reason that Godzilla stays at the bottom of the ocean, it's Greg Adams and Puff.
And with that, we are off. It is the Con Men Podcast. Greg Adams here. Puff is over there.
Hello.
I really don't know what we're going to do. This is the first time that we're starting this thing. So basically the idea is we are a podcast about two guys who put together a Comic-Con on a daily basis.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's the elevator pitch, right?
Yeah, we're talking about our experiences, what it's like to actually do it, go to one, deal with all the people you have to deal with. I don't want to give away anything in the intro, but it's a whole thing that probably deserves its own podcast. So here we are.
I actually do get a question online a lot from people who reach out, and they're thinking about starting a Comic-Con. And it could be a very small one. And Comic-Con, by the way, before we even start this whole thing, we fully acknowledge that the term Comic-Con with big C's is owned by San Diego. San Diego Comic-Con, as in the name of an event. Look, any event that uses Comic-Con in the name that is not San Diego or does not have expressed written consent from San Diego, they're breaking the law. We know that. We understand that. The event that we actually put together is called GeekedCon. So it doesn't have anything to do with Comic-Con. But when we say Comic-Con with little c's as in a descriptive term, nobody owns that, and it's not specific to any event. So if we ever say Comic-Con in a reference to something, don't think that we're talking about any specific event, including our own, really. That's fair, right?
That's
a disclaimer.
Fair. That's fair.
In other words, please don't send me a cease and desist, San Diego.
And they will.
They will. They will quickly, too. So what we are going to do, because I do get these questions a lot, we're going to pull back the curtain as much as we can. We're going to talk about some of the things that we have to go through in order to get this thing, what we had to go through back in 2015 to get it off the ground to start with, and what we have to do every single year to keep this thing moving. It's pushing a boulder up a hill every year. And I kind of do wish that when we started this back in 2015 that there was like a podcast or somebody out there who had done it, who was in the process of doing it, who was very open to talking about it, because it seems like it's a very tight-lipped industry and nobody wants to help one another, which I think is...
Well, once you get in, they open up a bit, but if you're an outsider and haven't been involved, it's hard to break in.
You know, that is true, but there's still like proprietary secrets, because in a lot of cases, it doesn't matter where your show is. If your show's in Connecticut or Chicago or the Southwest or the Northwest, you're basically competing with somebody all the time, because we are to the point now in the United States where there is a Comic-Con event every single weekend somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Big ones, small ones, medium-sized ones. I mean, it's a battle.
And
it's
so
a
you're
battle.
Competing not just for... And really, you're not competing for ticket sales if it's an event in Connecticut. But when you're putting an event together, you're competing for guests. You're competing for sponsors. You're competing for vendors. If there's another event happening on your weekend somewhere in the United States, you're basically competing with them.
Well, and you're competing for time, which is more than anything. Because if, you know, let's just say hypothetically, an agent has dealt with X Comic-Con before, they're going to answer that phone call before they answer us, who they don't know. So you're competing for time, you're competing for clients, you're competing for guests, sponsors, vendors. I mean, you name it. It's a battle.
Which is why it's kind of difficult to break in and why people are very tight-lipped about it. But that's the opposite of what we plan to do. We plan to turn over every stone, pull back every curtain as much as we can. There is some stuff that we will not be able to disclose.
Which is a bummer, because we have some great stories that we can't tell in explicit detail, because it might upset someone down the road, which is a... God.
Yeah.
There
are stories that at one point down the road, when we're not in this industry anymore, we will be able to tell them in full detail. We'll do our best to tell those stories in as much detail as we can provide, and we'll do our best to take care of that. But the other things that we're going to look for and try to provide are maybe some of those... not instruction, it's not like an instruction manual, but when you start to think about, and you know what, this will be good for people who aren't even thinking about starting a Comic-Con, but if you've ever wondered, how does a show develop things? We're going to go through those step-by-step with as much detail as we can possibly provide. So if you've ever had any kind of question, whether it's specific to our show.
Why didn't you book Ben Affleck?
Exactly. We're going to tear that stuff apart, and we're gonna tear it down as much as we can, so hopefully everyone can understand the decisions that are made, not just with our event, but some of the bigger events. And by the way, the bigger events do operate differently in a lot of ways than we do. I would consider our show to be a medium-sized show. I know that I was actually in a discussion online about this a couple of weeks ago, where years ago, when there were only a handful of shows, the definitions for large, medium, and small shows were a little different. Now that you have hundreds, if not thousands, of shows throughout the country, somebody referred to a show that had like 40,000 people attend it as a medium-sized show. And looking at the grand scheme of things, if you've got 40,000 people at your event, you're a large show.
Yeah.
Granted, there are shows that will have even more than that. There are shows that will have 100,000 in attendance. Those are also large shows. But if you took every show, every Comic-Con across the country, and laid them out in a linear line, and you started making chops of where the attendance was, you're not going to have that middle ground, those medium shows. 40 and 100 are going to be on the top. That's the upper 10% of all shows.
That's a big show. And then you have your San Diego Comic-Cons that are like super shows that are
I'm even going to lump that into the big show.
They're so completely different than anything else.
But they're honestly not that. So New York and San Diego are the big two. The distance between a Wizard World Chicago and a New York Comic-Con, it is vast. But compared to the difference between that and a small regional show, that is an ocean of difference.
So, that's fair.
So when the difference isn't that small between those big shows, I mean, the difference between Wizard World Chicago and New York Comic Con, that gap is about as big of a gap between a show that's in a library and a show that's in a ballroom at a hotel. Like, there is a gap there, but it's not as big of a gap as there otherwise would be. So those are the kind of things we'll get into way down the road. We're going to try to only cover a couple of things every week, because otherwise this would be a 3.5 hour long.
We could go forever.
We could go forever and still not get it all in.
And Greg's very wordy, so our three topics or whatever we're doing might be too much anyway.
Wow. Wow. Okay. I know where I stand. Then let's get into the first topic, which will play off from a lot of what we just discussed. The first topic we're going to get into is how the process of booking celebrity guests for a Comic-Con starts.
Well, it's been evolved a lot from year one to year six, because literally year one, we were just emailing anybody and everybody trying to get a response and go from there.
And let's tell those stories in a second after we set up how this works. So the way that it works is that a celebrity, if you have a particular celebrity that you would like your local convention to book, it's not as easy as just sending them a direct message on Instagram or sending them a tweet or posting on their Facebook wall. That is not how this works. In fact, most of the time, the celebrity themselves has no knowledge of how their booking stuff really works.
Yeah, they don't know.
A lot of times what you're dealing with is an agent, and it's not the Hollywood agent that is getting them roles in TV shows and movies. They have a convention appearance agent. Those agents are the ones who understand how this industry works, and in a lot of cases, they have to go to the celebrity and explain to that celebrity how this particular industry works. So we're not going to get into the financial aspects of it. We're not even going to break down how the payments work. But basically, there is a different structure of payments when it comes to a convention than if they were to book a TV commercial or even a personal appearance at like
a college.
Yes. So that's where this all begins, is that there is a process for it. It's not as simple as contacting someone on social media.
Yeah, we tried that. We found out the hard way that is not how you go about it. But, you know, it was a good learning experience.
Yeah, we've gone through quite a few learning experiences, and hopefully we can talk about those to the point where you, if you're going to put together your own Comic-Con, you don't have to deal with those. So back in that first year, like you were describing, we had no contacts in that convention agent industry.
Mm-hmm.
We were swinging in the dark.
You'd email people and you wouldn't get a response because they were basically look at the email and go, who the hell are these people?
Yeah.
And the other thing about this industry is I don't want to knock anybody. There's so many fly-by-night convention companies, quote unquote, that will throw something together and then it fails miserably, that a lot of folks won't even deal with you until you're in year two or three just to make sure you're legit and not going to screw over their client. So it's a whole thing, and we had zero contacts. The people we did have leads on just wouldn't respond, so we were just swinging and hoping and praying that someone answered. And then finally we got a hold of a couple of people and the ball started rolling, but...
Yeah, and once it did start moving in the proper direction, in the right direction, there were still things that we were learning as we went. When it comes to these type of events, we're not going to get into, the structure of how the payments work, but when you do book a guest for something like this, you are responsible for their transport, for their travel, for their food, for their hotel accommodations. You're responsible for everything.
Basically, it's like adopting a very large child for a weekend.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Shout out Brian Knobs.
Yes, Brian Knobs. We'll tell some Brian Knobs stories along the way, too. But basically, what we learned very quickly is that when you booked somebody, when you came to an agreement with them on what the pay was going to be, then all of a sudden these other charges that you may not have been prepared for really start to come in. And when we really start looking at, okay, well, now we got to fly in. We have to purchase 25 flights from New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Orlando, Florida, wherever. We have to start buying 25 flights round trip and a good chunk of them first class.
And transportation to the airport, from the airport. It's a whole thing.
And their hotels once they get here. And then when they get here, they're in a hotel. They don't have dinner readily available. Their mom can't tell them we've got food at home. They have to eat. So you have to pay for their food once they get here.
And depending on what they want to eat, you have to make their reservations because they don't know who to call or where to go. And it's not like it's a bad thing. It's just things you don't expect when you're trying to... they're just going to show up. We'll get them from point A to point B. They're going to do their job. They're going to go back home and do whatever they're going to do. Yeah, but you forget that they're strangers in a place they've probably never been to, so they have no clue what's going on. You might give them cash so they can buy a meal, but they don't know where to eat.
Yeah.
So it's a whole... You have to kind of build relationships not only with the people you're booking and their agents, but places around the city you're performing in. So it's like, this is a great restaurant. They take care of you. They know what's going on. Go have fun.
Yeah, and if you're thinking about putting together an event, those are things you might not be considering when you're just sitting around a table with your friends saying, we can totally do this. We can totally get away with this. And you even start to look at some of the numbers that you may have to pay a guest to bring them into town. But when you're financially putting it together on your budget, over budget for travel, mm-hmm. over budget for hotel, over budget for food, because those are the things that you can get snake bit by those pretty quick, and those can torpedo your entire event before it really even gets going.
And it's always good to have a little extra cash, as we've learned, because certain guests like certain things, so if you can... entertain them with the things they like, they might be more likely to attend your event.
The things they like, whether it's the entertainment that they like after the show or whether it's the particular type of bottled water that they want mm-hmm. to drink while they're there. Sometimes those bottles of water can get very expensive. And those are things that you have to provide once they are here. Now, this is a double-edged thing. This goes for people who are potentially thinking about starting a convention. This also goes for people who are regular convention attendees, because a lot of times they have a particular set of guests that they want in their head. I want these guests. I want this kind of guest. And that's not feasible for a lot of shows for various reasons. And this is just one of those. So when you're thinking about your favorite show, or a not even favorite show, but just a show you attend, maybe it's your local show, and you think that this show should get X guest because it's easy. They're on Twitter all the time. You just send them a DM and then it's done. All of these things play into how that doesn't work. Like, you can DM them, that's fine. And often, too, a celebrity is very nice on social media. So sometimes you can tweet at a celebrity and they say, oh, I'd love to go to that show. That doesn't mean the celebrity is literally getting on the phone with their convention appearance agent and saying, somebody tweeted at me that I should be at this show. Please contact this show. Like, there are so many dominoes that would have to fall perfectly in a line to make all of that happen.
And you have to find the right agent and hope that they don't have a deal with another convention somewhere else where they send a lot of clients because they're going to give them top priority over your show. It's a whole thing. That's going to be a theme of when we're breaking down. It's a whole thing.
Well, and we'll have to say stuff like that because there are aspects of it that we actually can't really explain based on NDAs or contract language or just the nature of the business. There are certain things.
Or it just doesn't make sense. Because there are things that happen that just literally do not make sense. Like, this should be a slam dunk. But for some reason, it just didn't work. It's one of those things.
Which actually, that's funny that you say that. And I'm gonna foreshadow something we're going to do later in the show. I have this Chewbacca head. I have filled with little slips of paper, and they are different random story topics of our experiences that we'll be able to tell a little story. And one of them that is in here is the guest, your favorite guest that we almost brought that fell short for whatever reason. And we don't have to get into the reasons of it, but I put that in there because it's just, it would be fun to discuss some of those ones that we were very like you said, this is a slam dunk. It's easy. We know this is happening now. Let's start planning all this. Only to find out in like 2 or 3 weeks, that ain't happening.
Yep. And some of them have been positive things like, hey, our boy got a job. Good for him. Or just they ended up being a complete duty head and did some bad stuff and ended up in prison.
Yeah. So we'll tell some stories like that. There's some other. Hey, no, you can't do that.
I had a catch in my throat.
There's some other stuff inside the Chewbacca head that involves like just randomly our favorite guest, what our favorite year was. And a couple other things that we can touch on, but the Chewbacca head of random stories is something we'll get to later on.
We might have to come up with a catchier name for that, but I like where your head's at.
You know what? If you want to come up with a catchy name, I'm all for it.
Okay. I'll think about it.
We're going to move on to our second topic, and we're going to try to get away from the Comic-Con talk for a second because we're going to talk about some generic geek stuff here as well. And we both are enamored and can't stop watching Disney Plus, and we know we're not alone. So
yeah.
I just wanted to take a couple minutes
and
to talk about
Disney
Plus.
And by the way, we're not getting paid for this.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
But we 100% endorse it. If you don't have it, pay the $7 or wherever the hell it is. It is worth it.
Yeah,
every penny.
I'm paying full price for mine. I am not getting any kind of kickback from the mouse to talk about this. But Disney Plus is one of the best streaming inventions ever. And we were kind of having this discussion because they crashed when they first launched.
Yeah. The crazy thing is they're like, yeah, we planned for a huge launch, and like they exceeded their expectations, which is insane because they first day, within the first 12 hours or something, they had over 10 million people sign up. Put that in perspective. Like, Netflix has been around for what, 15 years?
And they longer than that. I mean, Netflix has been around since they were mailing us DVDs.
True. But they've been around forever. And they've got something like 20 million or 25 million users. Disney almost got there in 12 hours.
Which is exactly why I think they should have been prepared for that, because Disney Plus isn't breaking new ground. They're not innovating. They are...
Hold on now. There is an unprecedented amount of content on Disney Plus, stuff that hasn't been available in years.
I wouldn't say unprecedented. I mean... Netflix and Hulu and other streaming services have large amounts of stuff.
Yeah, but it ain't this stuff.
Right.
That's, I mean, there's a difference
that
between
it's quality.
See horror movies on X platform versus, oh, I can watch the entire X-Men animated series with the original theme song and all that.
Which I have beef with that I want to get to in a second. Oh, but they should have been prepared because they weren't innovating. They were taking something that everyone's already familiar with. We all know how streaming platforms work now. So they don't have to explain to us. They don't have to explain to boomers how this works. They already know that it works. So you're taking an already trained audience and you're telling them, look at all of this quality content we have. Look at all of this new content. The Mandalorian launched right away and just killed everything. And by the way, spoiler alerts, because we'll probably say some things about The Mandalorian that if you have not seen it yet, skip ahead about 5 minutes, because we're going to talk about The Mandalorian as we talk about this Disney Plus. We're both enamored by it.
I don't think enamored is a strong enough word.
No, we're hypnotized.
We're all in.
We're intoxicated by it. Is that maybe the best?
You know, I kind of like appointment viewing of stuff. I'm not a big fan of the binge watching, but The Mandalorian's one series, I wish they just put it all out there so I could burn through it, because I can't get enough.
So when I was a kid, there was like a Star Wars revolution in the 90s. Like, it all came rushing back. And they put out the episode 1-3 trilogy. But when I was a kid, I fell in love with Boba Fett. I had a bunch of friends who were Han Solo guys. I knew a bunch of the Luke Skywalker kids. Everyone loved Chewbacca and Yoda. I was one of those Boba Fett guys. And I honestly couldn't tell you what it was about him. What made me like Boba Fett? It was probably just because he looked badass. But as a kid, I had a bunch of Boba Fett action figures. I've got Jeremy Bullock signatures all over my office. I was all in on Boba Fett. So when The Mandalorian shows up, and I've got a dedicated Mandalorian show that is shot at the quality of Star Wars, telling a quality Star Wars story, infusing all sorts of Star Wars characters that we've already seen throughout the universe.
And little Easter eggs that answer questions from, like, the original trilogy. Like, what was it, in Return of the
spoilers,
Jedi.
Spoilers again.
Well,
I just want to say that because we're going to get yelled at.
It's not really a spoiler. It's just in Return of the Jedi, when Vader talks to the bounty hunter, a.k.a. Boba Fett, he says, no disintegration. And it never was explained in any movie, TV series, comic book, any of that. And then, you know, you figure out they got a disintegration rifle. And when they use it, it is badass.
Yeah, the disintegration's a real thing, and it's awesome.
But, I mean, that was just a throwaway line in a movie 35 years ago that we finally have an answer to.
Well, we have to take a step back to remember that The Mandalorian is being written, and some of it, at least, is being directed by Jon Favreau, who's the guy that made Iron Man. He is maybe the man, besides Robert Downey Jr., who is most responsible for the Marvel Cinematic Universe being what it is today.
And now he's starting a Star Wars, not cinematic universe, but TV universe. And so far, two episodes in, doing a bang-up job.
Yep, and prepare for Christmas to be completely owned by Baby Yoda.
Oh, yeah. Him and what's the Nick Nolte guy?
Cool? Is that Kuel? K-U-I-L-L, I think is his name. Cool? Kuel?
Something like that.
I don't know, something like that. But Mandalorians are here to stay. I'm excited that everyone is coming to the Mandalorian tribe. And it's been beneficial for me, too, because as much as I love Boba Fett as a kid, I never really dove into, like, what a Mandalorian is, what it's all about. Over the last couple of weeks, I am all in on everything Mandalorian. I have gone back to the books. I'm going back to the comics. I'm actually finding a reason to really dive in and watch the animated series. So I am all in on Mandalorians right now.
And we've made some friends with some Mandalorians recently, like some real life ones.
What happened?
Remember, we made friends with the Mandalorians when we were in New Orleans?
Oh, okay.
Like legitimate Mandalorians.
Sorry, whoa.
So that you should be knowing about our new friends. You should learn about your friends.
I was so confused for a second there. That was way bad. That was bad. But yeah, so the other thing, I said I had beef with X-Men the Animated Series. That was one of the first things that I pulled up. The first thing I did with Disney Plus, I watched The Mandalorian first episode. That was awesome. I was all in, flipped right over to X-Men, the animated series. And I think I may have been one of the first people on the internet to make the joke, and it's time-stamped because social media time-stamps everything. I laughed. I put up a post because it was hilarious that Disney Plus actually asked me if I wanted to skip the intro of X-Men, the animated series. And my gut reaction was, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me right now?
We both know there are, I don't want to call them idiots, but
they're idiots.
People who did, in fact, skip the intro.
That used to be the ringtone on my cell phone for probably 5 years. But the beef that I actually have with it is that some of the episodes are slightly out of order. I got excited when I looked at season 1 and 2 and everything was in order. I was very excited. Because back in the day, if you remember, they didn't always come on TV in the right order. And it was noticeable.
Yeah.
But that was based on like production schedules, and some episodes were more difficult than others. And there was a point in the 90s where Fox Kids just really didn't care. I mean, they put Eek the Cat on TV. So they really just didn't care. But Disney Plus has an opportunity to actually right that wrong. They could sort these things in the proper order. And I got excited because I thought that they did. But then once I looked at season 3 the other night, I realized it was off. It was crazy. Maybe they'll fix it. They might be fixing it while we're talking now. And that would be awesome. It'd be great to go back and find out that it's fixed. But
well, I do know that they're changing the ratio on The Simpsons to the proper 20-20 ratio or whatever it's supposed to be.
I saw that they lost some of the visual jokes because of the way that it was done. Like, they cut off jokes, which was tragic, but I was too busy watching Gargoyles because it's actually there instead of watching The Simpsons.
That's the great thing about Disney Plus. You could literally lose your life in there because there's just so much stuff.
Yeah, again, we're not getting paid by the mouse to tell you how great Disney Plus is.
If Disney wants to cut us a check, we'll certainly take it.
Yeah, I don't even need a check. Just let me have my subscription for free, and we'll be good. Because we didn't even scratch the surface on the fact that, like, Endgame is available there. Captain Marvel is on there.
With all the bonuses features placed in the right spots in the movie. So
well, now that's weird, too, because I was told that they had it in there. And then I went to find it, and it wasn't. So they have, like, deleted scenes and director's cut stuff. But it's not actually like a director's cut in one place. You actually have to go watch one by one. So,
The Star Wars ones are together.
See, now that, and I know you did a deep dive on that right away.
Yep.
So I haven't made it all the way back to watching the Star Wars films, but you can watch the Star Wars films, and now you have them all in one place. You can either watch them chronologically based on episodes or based on releases. Question, what's the better way to watch it?
I prefer by release. Just because you start with the first one.
Start with A New Hope.
You get the first trilogy, the second trilogy, and the third trilogy. Because, honestly, if you don't start at the beginning with the classic Star Wars, some of the things that happen in the middle trilogy, 1, 2, and 3, kind of don't have the same impact. And you're like, you get a little bit lost if you're new to the Star Wars universe.
So here's a question. That holds up for the first 6 movies, but what about like all the new ones like Rogue One and Solo? Do you still have to slide those in chronologically?
Honestly,
or?
I haven't seen those two. I've watched the trilogies, like the 3 trilogies, but I haven't watched the spinoffs with Solo the movie and Rogue One or outside of the Star Wars Christmas special, some of the other.
Is the Christmas special on Disney Plus?
I have no idea.
That needs to happen.
You know what I want?
The Ewok movie?
The Ewok TV specials.
Yep.
Both of them, give them to me. I love the Ewoks, and if you're one of those people that hate Return of the Jedi, you suck.
You might be the most in on Ewoks of anyone I've ever met, and it's really weird.
Everyone should be in on Ewoks. A, they saved the day. B, they're awesome little teddy bears that are warriors and will just tear your ass up. And 3, they're Ewoks. They're awesome.
I the other day when you came in hot off Ewoks, I was just...
I almost bought a classic Ewok village last night.
Yeah, okay, wait. You sent that to me, and I remember everything about seeing the box, and it was still in box and everything. But the thing I don't remember was the price. How much were you about to spend on this thing?
It was like $150.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. This is a little over the edge.
No, it's not.
Okay, before we get to our tell a story feature, we're going to take a short break for a sponsor message.
The Con Men podcast is brought to you by GeeksCon, Shreveport's Comic-Con. You can find ticket and vendor info at geekscon.com.
All right, it is time to stick our grubby little fingers inside this Chewbacca head and pull out a theme for our little tell a story.
Better segment. Make it good.
Well, I'm fidgeting around with these little pieces of paper. I want to set this up by reminding everybody we helped put together a Comic-Con called GeekedCon in Shreveport, Louisiana. You can find it at geekedcon.com. And what these stories are going to be about are our experiences actually putting this event together over the last 5 years. So
you're being modest over there. Help put together. You do like 85% of the work. I do like 10% of the work, and then the rest is made up by random people.
All right, I think maybe with those percentages, you might be taking a little bit of extra credit there. But
Whatever. But I'm the one with the microphone, so
this
I'm going to say
true.
It.
All right, let me go ahead and pull this one out. I have no idea what it's going to say. This could be a trash way to start this. Yeah, okay, this one's not bad. This one might actually take a little bit of thinking, though. So we're going to have to think on this for probably a second, but who is the most underrated GeekedCon guest that we've ever had?
Oh, I already know that.
Oh, really? Okay.
Brian O'Halloran. Brian O'Halloran was a guy when we announced him, people were kind of excited for, but weren't like super pumped. I don't want to say he's a lower level guest, but he's definitely not Lou Ferrigno or Elvira or one of those people. He had a steady crowd, but he was an awesome dude. More people should have hung out with him because he was just fun and funny. And basically, if you love Dante in the Clerks universe, Brian O'Halloran is that plus some. He's just an awesome dude. Totally fun. One of these years, I'm going to convince you to bring him back just because he's a good dude. But he should have got way more love than he got. And if you didn't buy an autograph, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah, Brian O'Halloran was here in 2016. He was a great guest. Like, I try to talk to the guests as much as possible, but I'm usually very, very busy during the show itself. So if it's somebody that I'm actually like going out of my way to make a bunch of time to go talk to, that's personal, like, just me wanting to talk to that person. And Brian O'Halloran was one of those guys. I went over and talked to him a whole bunch. I love the Clerks movies. Big part of my developmental years. And Brian O'Halloran was a lot of fun. I actually have in my office when Brian left, he wrote, Bye-bye Shreveport?
Yep.
And then signed it on his tablecloth. And so I cut that bad boy out because, again, we do this thing. So tear down is us as well. So I'm tearing down, and I see that he wrote this big goodbye Shreveport on his table. I go over there and cut that off, and it is on the wall in my office. I am torn right now between two guests that one sprung to mind right away, and the other one I had to think about for a second. So am I able to do two?
Sure.
Okay.
We don't have rules here.
Very true. The first one that sprang to mind was Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Hacksaw.
Hacksaw, the WWE Hall of Famer, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, was here in 2018, 2017.
Don't give me the line.
2017 is when he was here. And he is a WWE Hall of Famer. Everyone remembers him with the American flag and a 2x4. But what a lot of people outside of our particular area don't remember, in all likelihood, is the Mid-South wrestling era. The Mid-South wrestling era had Shreveport as like their headquarter number two.
Yeah.
They were headquartered, I believe, out of Dallas, but they had all of their promos for TV were cut locally in Shreveport. They wrestled often at multiple different locations at the state fairgrounds between the Irish McNeil Boys Club and the Hirsch Coliseum.
Yep.
So they wrestled multiple times down there, and Hacksaw Jim Duggan was a big part of that. So we had a bunch of people who came out that had seen Hacksaw wrestle when they were younger. They grew up watching him win the first ever WWF Royal Rumble, become a Hall of Famer. His wife came with him, and they bring 2x4s to sign. And for a show, like, they're professionals at this. They know a show a certain size, they need so many 2x4s. They showed up, and within the first couple of hours of the show, she came to us frantic. Who can take me to a Home Depot? And so we had to get her to a Home Depot and a Lowe's multiple times. She knows exactly what kind of board she needs, what the cut is, how many to grab. And she took so many trips that weekend because they kept running out of boards because everybody wanted to see Hacksaw. And I heard, so many times this weekend.
I actually have a bent key from pulling out staples from Hacksaw's 2x4s.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan was the one that jumped to my mind right away. The one that I actually had to think about, and it's unfair in a couple of ways. This one would have been, I think, also 2017. Eric Stolhansky, who was from Super Troopers. He's Rabbit from Super Troopers. Now, what happened there? That was 2018. 2018 he was here.
All I know is it was super last minute.
Because we had a massive cancellation. We had a couple of massive cancellations that year. And to fill those cancellations, we ended up having to get some extra people very late in the game. And Eric Stolhansky was one. Actually, it might have been the year before that, now that I think about it. Whatever year it was, he was a last-minute replacement. We really only had like 2 or 3 weeks to promote that he was coming. Usually we try to spend 6 months promoting the show and guests. So instead of 6 months, we had about 2 weeks. Now, Super Troopers is gigantic. It is one of the handful of movies that I can quote front to back. I can watch the whole movie through and do the entire thing. So to have a guy from that was really cool for me personally. But to see the amount of people who showed up with aviator shades and dressed as a Vermont State Trooper who came in there after he was only promoted for 8 days, maybe, to be at the show. The amount of people that came out and were excited about Eric Stolhansky, he's very underrated for our event.
Very true.
And
anybody that breaks out the bear costume, if you've seen the movie, yes. You know what I mean, on short notice, that means you got a good guest.
Do you have this regularly? did you make this? How did this come to be? Those are some underrated guests, and I'm sure if we really sat and thought about it, we could come up with some more underrated guests. And you could make an argument that some of the biggest guests we ever had were underrated, even though they were some of the biggest.
Lori Petty.
Okay, moving on. let's start to wrap things up here. So if you've made it this far, that means you are interested in one of the things that we have to offer. You're either interested in putting together your own Comic-Con type event, you're interested in how a Comic-Con comes together, or you're maybe interested in our particular event. Whatever it is, those are things that we will cover every single week. We're going to mix in some other stuff, like the telestory things. Do you have anything planned that we didn't do today that you're going to fire at me randomly over the next couple of weeks?
I don't ever have plans. I just go with it, man.
What's weird is that this whole thing is like your plan. Like, you're planning the whole grand scheme, but then when it comes to actually doing it, you're like, no, I don't have plans.
Well, it's just, you put us in front of microphones and we talk. Who needs a freaking plan?
I do. I need a plan. That's why I have a detailed plan.
Remember at the beginning of the show when I said, yeah, you're very detail-oriented and talk a lot? That's where this fits in. You're very anal.
I don't like the way that I'm being treated right now.
Snowflake.
No, hey, listen, okay, boomer. So the deal with this podcast moving forward is that we will be breaking down a lot of those things, and in the future we will, like, we spent a lot of time today explaining how the process of booking a guest works. We'll probably revisit that maybe in a more detailed fashion. But any of the questions that you may have about how one of these events comes together, that's what we're here to do. We're here to either shed some light on it, maybe outright answer it, or just give you some details on how we're planning our event, because one of the things that, like, I should have mentioned back when we were talking about how to book a guest, I'm working on it right now. I'm literally communicating, and I keep looking at my phone, literally communicating with agents about a guest right now while we're doing this. So that's how much effort and work we put into this thing, and how all-encompassing.
Can we make a guest announcement? It's our first episode. We should have something special.
No.
Come on.
No.
Come on.
No, we don't have... We don't... No. There's not enough ink dried on paper to make that happen.
You disappoint me.
So no, we do not have that. But we will actually make guest announcements for our show on this show. So you might not hear it first on this show. You'll probably actually hear it after the fact on this show.
Our first guest announcement, I'm just going to go for it. Greg Adams is going to be there. Everybody give a round of applause for Greg Adams, first announced GeekCon guest.
I will be there, but I will not be at a table. I will not be signing autographs or taking pictures.
I've seen you take plenty of pictures, and you're always signing stuff.
Okay.
Most of the time it's contracts, but that's not the point.
Well, okay. All right, I see what you're doing there. We will continue to bring you some high quality, in-depth, inside info on how Comic-Cons work, and that's the reason that we call this the Con Men Podcast.